Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 289, March 1st, 2017. Bob begins the Pine Board Transmitter Project. Hi, everybody. I have returned. Yes, after all kinds of things that we do in January and February, I have returned. And we've got a really fun-packed night, of course, again tonight. Lots of fun-packed stuff. But we have Michael Coulter will be here from DERA and telling us the update there. But before we get to him, let's run around the horn real quick and see what's going on. Gordo, how you doing down in Costa Mesa?
I am fine. And you know, this is the 1st of March, and March means mobile month. And we're going to talk about mobile HF whip antennas for the beginner tonight.
All right. George, did you have any storms and nonsense last night down in Mississippi? How you doing?
They didn't come through till this afternoon, so I did get to make an emergency trip to a transmitter like we always like to do.
That's what you do, stand by awake for that call. Don, how are you doing? You guys had a little shakeup down there, didn't you? Not only weather, but lots of other stuff, huh? You okay?
We don't have Don on with us yet, Bob.
Don didn't get on yet? Okay. Well, we will... I'm going to start real quick. I've got a video I want you to see. It's actually just a promo of what's going to happen in April, the AM rally. Roll that for us, please. I wish we could have the music. Oh, the music is great. But what this is telling you is about AM. It's going to be a great piece of event that everybody's that's on AM is just elated, and we're going to try to hope more and more you guys get on, because it's very, very simple to get on AM anymore. Every radio out there sounds great on AM, and we're going to have a whole weekend of it, and we want you to join and have some fun. If you've never been on AM, hey, there's your time. Just push that AM button and bingo, away you go. And it's going to be on April the 1st, and it really is going to be a lot of fun, and we want you to join us. To get more information about it, well, you can go to the amrally.com, and you'll be able to hear and see what's going on in that, and you'll get to pick up that music. The music was really, really good. And it brought that thing home. So dial up amrally.com, and you'll be able to experience a little more of what's going on. So I'm going to be over here firing up the soldering iron, because tonight we're finally going to get started with the Pine Board Project. Yes, yes. It's going to take several months to get all this together, but we're going to do a real simple start to let you kind of see what we're doing. But in the meantime, we're going back to Costa Mesa, and Gordo's going to pick it up from there. Go ahead, Gordo.
Well, thanks so much, Bob. And, you know, during the recent Ham Fest out in the desert, we had so many brand new hams say, what's the best way to get on HF with the most efficiency? And I said, no problem at all. Just bore a hole in the top of your vehicle. For 10 meters, it only needs to be an 8-foot whip. For 15 meters, it needs to be 11 feet. For 20 meters, it's going to be 16 feet, and that's going to take out a few fluorescent tubes at McDonald's. And for 40 meters, that whip needs to be 32 feet, And of course, for 75 and 80, it needs to be about 64 feet. Well, we really can't squeeze that much whip and drive around at the same time and spare the light bulbs above us. So let's take a look at simple first-time beginner mobile whips. So Brian, if you'll go ahead and start out, these come from various different sources. This one is from Quiksilver, and they call them ham sticks, and they are center-loaded helical wind. The stainless steel stinger on the top is what radiates the signal. The coils don't radiate, and the lower section is where the major current is that ultimately gets resonated into the top whip. Now, you'll see them in many different styles, but they're all packaging styles, but they're all about the same. A winding around a fiberglass shaft and a 3/8-24 stud, and then the stainless steel whip stinger. And when we're finished, I'll give you a close-up to take a look and see what we're talking about. What feeds the 3/8-24 stud or the SO239 is a fairly spaced apart winding, usually of number 14. I'd love to see 12 or even 10 gauge that is in this section right here, which is next to the base of the antenna. And then it goes into the actual inductance of the loading coil. And as you can see, it's fairly small wire. I peeled away the shrink wrap so you could take a look at that. And this is where you really want to choose a whip, a good quality whip. That has a fairly large winding, and then that's going to feed that energy up into the tip whip. And they are available from not only Quiksilver Ham Sticks and Ham Whips, but MFJ. If you look at DX Engineering's fabulous catalog, page 86 to 92, the MFJ version single-band whips are less than $20. They're like $17. What a deal. Hustler also makes center-loaded, and Diamond and Comet each have a variety of center loading as well. Now, we're not talking about the brand new ham going for something as extensive as this. But I know you may laugh, but let me tell you, when you hear his mobile signal on the air, there's no question about it. It's like a base station on a beam. Major signal. Looks a little strange, but there's a reason. Next week and week after next, we'll tell you about why all the matching down there at the base of the antenna feed point. And yes, we're going to talk about the excellent antennas that are available that are motor driven, and they certainly have their place. But as you can see by this large antenna for the brand new ham, we got to start off small because you're getting used to it. Well, primary of importance is a good ground below the antenna feed point. This particular antenna base, this one comes from Diamond. Comet also makes one. And at a recent Hamfest, I spotted this stainless steel one. I don't know who made it, but it's deluxe. But what you want is this particular mount that's either going to feed a SO239 or a 3/8-24 thread. We'll show you those in just a moment. Very important is a good quality mount where there are four of the screws that you can dog down to hold it well onto the trunk lip or the side lip. The antenna comes with spacers so you don't mar up the inside finish of the trunk lip. Throw the spacers away. You want to have a good DC connection between the trunk lip mount and the trunk itself. So dog it down so it penetrates the paint, and then you'll have a good DC ground. Now, look at that area to the left of the trunk lid. That's a portion of the mount that sticks out. If you're not careful and you slam the trunk, it very well could scratch the top of the vehicle. So be very careful in your mounting that you do a little test before you give that trunk a good slam. Each of these mounts are called lip mounts, with the four little screws that hold them onto the side or the trunk of your vehicle. They do not come with a cabling because you've got to say, am I going to do a 3/8-24 thread or am I going to do an SO239 to accept a PL259 on the end of an antenna? So remember, beside the mount, you're also going to need the cabling and the receiver for the antenna. And you can see what it looks like once we have everything all ready to close that trunk and hopefully not mar anything on the vehicle itself. And as you can see, many of the antennas with their associated connectors comes with a small cable so you can route it inside the trunk area and then it goes to a larger cable to minimize losses. So don't panic. The small cable is to get it into that little teeny groove that you see on the side of this particular vehicle. Now, if you're doing a rent a car and you don't want to go to the trouble to route it through the back seat and the trunk and so on, most rented cars, when you close the door, there's a little rubber there, and it should not kill the coax. But give it a try on a spare piece of coax before you subject it to closing down. Now, this particular antenna comes from Diamond, and it's quite a performer, but it doesn't take a 3/8 24 thread, but rather it takes an SO239 to receive what is a PL259 type of UHF connector. That's the Diamond antenna. And the Diamond antenna is a great performer. You see the stainless steel area below the coil. There's the coil area and then the stainless steel whip above. And that's where maximum radiation takes place, is on the tip above. Now, remember, power radiated is equal to the radiation resistance times the square of antenna current. And you want that antenna current not to go through a big mama coil at the base of the antenna, or else you're going to cut down on your radiation resistance. So that's why they put these coils about midway up, and there is almost no loss there in the base unit of this particular Diamond antenna. By the way, that Diamond antenna does lay down, so you can get it in your garage. And no, the antenna is not forgiving. If you forget to lay it down and drive into the garage, you will hear a noise. This is Leo of Kenwood. Leo's antenna is the simple $18 from DX Engineering Ham Whip. He's got it mounted up relatively high on his Honda Accord, and it's a great performer on a single band. No matching or anything necessary other than getting the antenna tuned in. And here's another look at that K400, the Diamond antenna, or make that the Diamond mount. And this happens to be the Outbacker antenna, which we'll talk about another week from now as we talk about multi-band for mobile use. Yeah, each of the antennas have a little corona ball at the top, but quite frankly, even though there's major voltage at the top, take a lead pencil when someone is going AM on April 1st, and you'll draw a nice little arc. Remember, voltage is at the tip, and current is at the base. So a lot of high voltage up there, but don't panic if you don't have that little corona ball. Now, as we walk around the different ham fests, and Michael, you'll realize that that's where we used to be, and I can't wait to where we're going to be. You see all sorts of different antenna mounting configurations for these single band HF whips. This one is mounted a little low, and in fact, I don't see any coax going to the base of it, so he's not going to have much of a signal. But even with coax to the base, there's probably going to be some ground losses. And anytime we have ground losses along with stray capacitance, it's going to affect adversely efficiency of the antenna. So you really want to have a good ground plane below the single band or the multi-band motor-driven whips. Here it is on a rack, and he said it took a little bit of matching to get it to load up, but once he got it loaded up, it did a nice job. But you're going to find that if you put a single band whip or a multi-band whip on some sort of a roof rack, you're going to have a lot of stray capacitance between the base of the antenna and the base, or actually of the roof metal of the vehicle. And that is stray capacitance, again, is going to give you increased ground losses and your efficiency goes down the tubes. Here's Martin Jew, and Martin and I are demonstrating coils and reactants. And you can see that when we have introduced reactants down there in the coil area, we lose a lot of energy, enough to light up a fluorescent tube. And yeah, Martin was not getting electrocuted, just having fun. For emergency preparation, many times you can do sort of a vice grip type mount that'll accept a 3/8 24 on the top. And this is good as long as you don't lose the white spacer. If you just screw down your single band antenna on this copper threaded stud, you're going to short out the entire antenna. So make sure, don't lose this guy, and make sure the little tiny extrusion is pointed down and it nestles in right on that spot. And now you can go ahead and screw on the whip. So when people say they aren't getting out worth a darn aboard a sailboat and it's mounted over a metal rail, I usually find that they've lost this little tiny white insulator, and that is critical for the antenna. Here's a great antenna installation, and it's made by the Hustler mount, and it's a real ham that does that, that bores holes in the vehicle. But nonetheless, this one is standing tall and working great on a single band. Here's another one. Oh, close call. You see that lip to the left of the mount just touching the red lens on his vehicle stoplight. So we're lucky that it didn't crunch the stoplight. So watch that little ridge. It provides stability, but at times, it can cause problems to either the paint job or a red lens cover like you see here. And measuring the ground to the chassis ground, you should not see something like this, several hundred ohms resistance. You want to see almost no resistance, and that'll mean good efficiency. So while this looks like a great spot for that HF antenna way up high, you're going to have stray capacitance, and that is going to give you ground losses, and that's going to cut your efficiency 3 to 6 dB down. This one, far too low, and it's on probably a plastic bumper, and I don't know how this would load at all once they put the antenna and the spacers and so on it. But you need to really get your single band whip, which only weighs a couple of pounds, up nice and high. Again, here we go, that capacitance between the mounting plate and the top of the vehicle that may or may not preclude the antenna loading well. Here's Leo's car again. Another good look on the left side of that single band whip and the stainless steel stinger. And sure, you can run some nylon line. So if you drive like Bob Heil does or Mike Calder at 100 miles, like 1 mile an hour, you're not going to kill trees or anything like that. So again, while it's tempting to put these mounts on a roof rack, it's the stray capacitance between the base of that antenna that will get you in trouble. And once your antenna is installed, sweep it. And on 40 meters, you'll see about 40 to 60 kilohertz of bandwidth. On 75 meters, you may only get 10 to 20 kilohertz of bandwidth. But what you're looking for is a good dip and a feed point impedance of about 50 ohms. So next week, we're going to talk about multi-band mobile antennas. And again, we'll talk about how those antennas require extra finesse to get them rolling. And week after next, we'll talk all about getting 12 volts to your rig and going on the air. And that, unfortunately, none of these antennas and radio systems will work well on some of the electric vehicles. So here's the mount. And again, this is the 3H24 receiver. Here's another mount. This is for the diamond antenna, and that's with the SO239 connector. And one last thing on the single band whips. Many times the whips are tuned a little too low. So you go to shorten the length of the whip tip to raise the frequency, and doggone it, it's just not quite high enough. Easy fix. Instead of cutting the tip whip, take a little bit of metallic whatever and put it right over two or three of the coils. And what that does is it shorts out the coils. That'll raise the resonant frequency without having to cut the heck out of the whip and hacksaw and all that kind of stuff. So a real simple way to go higher in frequency is to short out via just a capacitive bit of conductive whatever. Even a gum wrapper would work with a little bit of black tape. So two or three turns and you're up about 100 more kilohertz. It looks a little strange, but that's my tip whip. So we hope all of you with a tech license will get on 10 meters mobile. And those with a general or extra class license, if you're just getting started on mobile HF, get a small, inexpensive whip. And again, if you look at the DX Engineering catalog and look at all of the 8 to 10 pages of antenna types, give them a phone call, tell them how you're going to mount it, and you'll find the DX Engineering folks on the desk will be technical and will talk you through getting just the right stuff. So hope to hear you on HF. And Bob, you've got Michael there. I can't wait to hear what's happening at Hamvention 17. Bob?
We have got lots of going on here tonight, and Michael's going to join us to start it all off. And Michael, how are you doing over in, you're in Dayton tonight at the club site, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And we had a serious bunch of storms come through last night, and I heard you asking the other guys about that. Well, I spent the night at the National Weather Service until about 5 or 5:30 in the morning. As the net control operator, we cover about 53, 54 counties in southern Ohio, northern Kentucky, and western Indiana, and, excuse me, eastern Indiana.
Well, I think you have a couple of announcements to make for us, so let's get right to it and hear what's going on with the winners of the awards.
Okay, well, I'll go through that relatively quickly, but our special achievement is Mr. Ram Mohan, and his call is Victor United 2, Mike Yankee Hotel. And Ram has been really instrumental in India with the National Institute of Amateur Radio. And not only has he been working throughout all of India doing training and classes and working with youth and Boy Scouts, one of the more outstanding things he did recently when there was a great earthquake in Nepal, he led a group of hams in there and became a real focal point in helping with the communication efforts in Nepal. And he's also helped on several other major incidents. But we are really excited about having naming him the special achievement winner. And it's not only good for him, but I believe the hams in India are very excited about it too, that we recognize people from other parts of the world. The technical achievement goes to Robert Brownstein, Kilo 6, Roger Baker. And he's done an awful lot in the CW world, you know, building up CW ops, and he started training programs to really bring people into using CW and the art of using it. And he also has a group of he's working with young people now, and he's bringing youth in and showing them how exciting it is with using CW. And he's a very exciting person, and we had a whole lot of people who are really rooting for this guy to be recognized in that capacity. Then we have our Club of the Year. And I will say that picking these winners is always difficult because there's so many good people to choose from, and in clubs especially. And clubs are really is the heartbeat of amateur radio in so many ways, because I know in our club it's hard to do, you know, we don't have singular achievements very much. It's usually a club collaborative effort. But our Club of the Year is a group out of Vancouver, Washington. There, I got it right. And it's the Clark County Amateur Radio Club. And that's a Whiskey 7 Alpha, India Alpha. And that is their website. And they have, not only do they have a beautiful website, but I am totally amazed at how many things that club does for amateur radio. It's, I mean, they cover the gambit. And I think a lot of clubs, including ours, could learn from them how they keep that momentum going. And then our Amateur of the Year, you probably is no stranger to any of you, is Mr. Frank Bauer, Kilo Alpha 3 Hotel Delta Oscar. Did somebody say something?
No, I'm just saying hooray for Frank, the AMSAT man. That's wonderful. AM of the Year.
Yeah, and it was interesting calling him and talking to him about it. He was totally stunned. As all the winners are. And, you know, several of you, I think, have been winners of these awards. And it's a pretty big deal. I mean, when you look at, and I've mentioned this too, from the day you actually take your test to where you begin to get back in amateur radio and you reach that pinnacle and that place where people recognize you in the world as one of the finest that is making a contribution to amateur radio. I know what Frank is doing, his work with Eris, his work with a space station, and goes back to the Goddard days when I can't remember the astronaut's name, but when they first started having hams in space and in the communication, he's been there from that very start. I believe he's been at that since at least 1983. So those are our award winners, not to take up a lot of time. Any questions on those, comments?
No, I congratulate all of them. It's a great honor. I was fortunate in 1982 to receive the Ham of the Year, and the year preceding me was Barry Goldwater. I'm going, wait a minute. I'm not in that class, but it all has to do with what we all do for ham radio, and I was very honored by that way back in 1982. So I can realize what they're feeling today when they get the notice that they've won these awards. That's great. Now, George, you had the technical award a few years back too, didn't you? Oh, where'd George go? George left us. Well, anyway, and Gordo, you had a couple of awards, didn't you?
I was awarded via the DARA organization, and I so much appreciate the recognition. But, you know, the real workers are those that are teaching classes these days and doing a fabulous job. And Frank, what a great job he does for AMSAT, working with Rosalie and Owen Garriott, there you go, Michael. Number one man, and I worked him on the first revolution.
That, very good. You got it.
Well, we appreciate all that DARA does, because it's a lot to do that, and there's a lot of expense in making it all happen and getting them to the May event. So we're looking forward to that, and I really appreciate you coming on. You got any quick words about what's going on? It looks like things are kind of gelling over in Xenia, right?
Yeah, I will tell you that we work day and night on these, on trying to achieving, not trying, but plan is to achieve the a five-star event. A couple of things that have happened recently, you know, the county has really stepped up. It was funny, a news channel went over, TV news station went over there and was asking one of the guys, well, what do you think of Hamvention? And he says, well, we're hanging about 5 miles of wire in these buildings so that they have good electrical service and good internet. And the county has been unbelievable helping us. Have you ever heard of any Hamfest that they close the schools in the city for?
Never.
They close the schools in Xenia, the city of Xenia, actually the surrounding community. And not only that, they've offered if we need any parking or whatever we need, and buses and things like that. So, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that community is so supporting what we're doing. And to try to give back, we are offering student tickets for students to come in and, enjoy the day and learn about amateur radio. And got to tell you a funny story. I was reading on some of the feedback on some of the other things about him mentioned, and it has gotten out recently that the schools are going to close. So the guys are kind of talking there about, you know, we ought to try to dress nicer. Guys, let's kind of put a move on so we could look a little bit nicer for those young people. I got
yes,
a kick
I
out
agree.
Of that.
That's great. Well, we appreciate you coming on for this. We'll have you on several times as we get closer to the big event. And
yeah, I hope you do, because there – We do hope you do, because, Bob, we got a whole lot cooking that's really coming together, and you're going to see more and more of it. And I do want to apologize. We had some glitches trying to get, you know, the ordering system up and all of that. But the team even was here at the clubhouse tonight. We're working on so many different aspects, even everything from parking. We got an engineering group helping us on that and getting all the vendors taken care of. Probably taking too much time. Yeah. Thank you for having me on there, on here, and hopefully we'll see you again. And it's always good to see that, you know, George and Gordo as well. So had a good time with Gordo down there in Florida. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thanks for
see
coming
you,
on, and all right. So there's some of the things that are happening for Dayton, and I hope all of you are keeping abreast of the happenings. It looks like Xenia is going to be a happening and a lot of fun. So we'll continue on with that. Well, I've been talking about this for months, and a lot of people are not aware of what I'm exactly talking about. But tonight we get to start it, and I just hope that everybody understands what's going on here. This just isn't about AM. It's not just about a transmitter. It's about building. Building. I want to try to get more people involved in building. And we're calling this the Pine Board Project. The reason for that is that we're building this first run will be building a transmitter on pine board. And why do I do that? Because you can see the circuitry. And so this all started with a very good friend of mine who is one of the AM buddies in the morning, W0BVT. That's one of his transmitters that he built, pretty large transmitter, but he's on the air with it every day. And hey, maybe someday you'll be able to do that also. That's what we're hoping, that you'll be able to build things. And I appreciate Dick getting involved with this so much. The situation is we want to try to not only build things, but we want to teach you what you're doing when we are building it. That's the key. A lot of times we're not taught how to do things. We just do it. Well, here we want to try to teach you a little more than just soldering, putting things together. What I've done here, we come up with a schematic. You've seen schematics written. And this is a simple, this first little project is a simple field strength meter. And I know a lot of people say, oh, it's a big deal. No, no, no. The situation is I want to start this to let you see what's going to happen as we go into each week, because we're going to build a power supply, a 300-volt power supply. We're going to build a microphone preamplifier with the 12AX7. We're then going to build the transmitter. Then we're going to build the final tuner and all of that, and then we put it together. This is not just a one-night deal. But in doing this, we're going to try to help you learn a little bit more about the schematics and the building. And not only that, you're going to have a lot of fun doing it. That's the key. We'll look at this again. We see this simple field strength meter. It's an antenna and a diode, and a very special diode, a 1N914, has a plus, and we're going to talk about that, a meter, and the capacitor across that meter. And then potentiometer will set the sensitivity of it. Out here is a 2.5 millihenry choke. Now, we've got something else we're going to do there. This is good for the low frequencies. But now let's jump to the next picture below it. I did a pictorial. And the pictorial shows us the actual part, what it looks like. That coil is one of these little guys. And that's in the front end of it. Antenna feeds that. Then it goes from there to the potentiometer. And you all probably know about potentiometers and volume controls and so on. Then we have the meter. You know, we talk about the flea markets a lot, and everybody says, wow, why do you go to the flea market? Well, you go there to find these parts. Every one of these parts came from my junk box, especially this. Meters are tough. Whenever you see a meter, buy it. This came from an old mobile SWR bridge of Heath kits. And you just keep them because you never know when you're going to use them. And I dug around the other day to put this together for you, and I thought, aha, but this is the capacitor that goes across it, and this is a 0.01. And the most important part is the diode. This isn't the diode we're going to use, but the reason I'm showing you this is it's a little bigger, so you'll be able to see it. You'll notice that there's a band on that diode. Every diode is polarized. And we'll look back up at the pictorial or the schematic, and that band has to be placed in this position. If you turn it around, it will not work. So you have to be real cognizant of the diodes when you install a diode. And so we end up with these parts. What do you do with them? Well, here's what we're going to do with them. I did a few things ahead of time. Why do I do this on pine board? What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is you can see as we go through all this. If we built this underneath a chassis, it's hard to keep abreast of what's going, especially to young builders that haven't done a lot of building. The first thing I did is I mounted some terminal strips. The second thing I did, I went ahead and mounted the diode. This one's a glass diode. It's very sensitive. So I mounted that on. You'll notice that the band is on this terminal, the plus. So you have to pay attention. What is the next thing to happen? If you remember again, there's the schematic. What are we going to do? We're going to mount that choke, and that choke's going to go over here and feed the potentiometer. So we're going to come back down here and make this all happen. We'll take that 2.5 millihenry choke, and we're going to solder that little booger. I got it all set up that it'll fit right in here. Get out the old soldering iron here first. I had it warmed up and going for you, so here we go. And it's very, very easy, very simple. Let me get it around here so I can get that in there. Make sure I don't burn my finger, right? I could be using dykes with it. So all the chat room will be on there just beating me up on certain things I'm doing. Have at it, folks. The only thing is that I've been doing this for about 60 years, and I love building. There we go. And now we're going to mount the other end of this over here. I'm going to put a little bit more solder on that guy. Yeah, I like to really make sure things are soldered. A lot of times you don't heat it up enough. You got to get all the components to the same temperature so that they all melt together. Come on here. There she goes. Here comes the potentiometer. Now, one other thing, the potentiometer is tied together, the wiper, and one side of it. So what we did here ahead of time is I mounted that so that we have the potentiometer ready to mount. I don't have to deal that quickly. If we had more time, I'd do all that for you. So that's going to come over here, and the potentiometer is going to go in here, and we're going to solder it all together. Now we're making headway. The one thing about the solder, you want to make sure you're using rosin core solder. That's very important. You only want to do this with rosin core. I'm going to solder the other side of the potentiometer, and we're almost there. One thing I did ahead of time also, I mounted the capacitor on the back of the meter, and we want to make sure this all goes okay. That guy's solid? No. Come on here, dude. Yeah, we'll get him in there. And when we get done, we'll fire up one of the transmitters and see if it works. But what we're going to do throughout this project is I'll be giving you other projects. The power supply is going to come next. And we have to be careful because this power supply has got some high voltage. So you got to make sure you don't do something crazy and get lashed across the high voltage. Now, you'll notice on the back on the diagram, there's a red wire that goes from the plus of the meter over to that diode. The green wire goes over to the pot. And that's what we're going to do here. I've already done that ahead of time. So let's take this green wire. We're going to put him in here and make it happen. And we have one more solder and we'll be finished. I'll check all these to make sure they're all solid. That's very important. And then remember, the red wire is going to go over here to the diode. And we'll solder all that. And we got her happening. Let me get a lot of solder on him. There we go. Come on here, dude. Okay. And we have all of that ready to go. And what I'm trying to do here in this first project is try to demonstrate to you how we're going to end up doing this. Each week we'll do a little bit of other things, and the preamplifier with the 12AX7, the power supply and all. And you're going to be able to see what's happening because it's all going to be out in front of you. And it's a wonderful way to build things. What's the last thing we have to do? There's one other very important thing, of course. We have to put a knob on the pot. Now, once you get this going, when you go to the next HamFest, find an enclosure for it. Or go down to the hardware store and look around. There's one important thing we haven't done. What's that? An antenna. Well, just for funds, I just took a couple of leads, and that's where the antenna goes. Not antenna, could be like a rubber duck. It could be a connector and do it to a piece of wire or another type of antenna, but you got to have an antenna. So what we're going to do is fire this thing up and see what happens. I got about 3 minutes before we got to go on here, and let's go up here. There we go. Let's get that going. And one of the things that you always want to make sure is that when you make your solder connections, everything is solid. You've got diodes that are right, and everything should happen, and away you go. And it's very important to make it all happen and working. That's so important. Make sure it works. But we don't know if this is going to work yet, but we'll find out here in a minute. What we want to do for all of you out there in radio land is I want you to build. That's so important, to make things happen. That's the critical piece to me, is to make sure that when you do things that we will be able to make things happen. Okay, let me go over here and get a little carrier happening. There we go. And that should do that. And I got very little RF coming out of there. I don't know if you can see that, but I need to have a better antenna on it. But there we go. There we go. I just have this little, I should have a better antenna because we're on 20 meters and it should be a lot more antenna for it. But there we go. And it's one of those things that if you put this all together and make it work for what you're trying to do, the frequency, then things will happen. Now, one other thing you can do, this is for lower frequencies down around 75 meters. And, one of the things that you need to do is maybe make a different coil. And how you do that is you take a popsicle stick, this happens to be the nail file, and wrap about 100 turns, like number 30 wire. Be sure that when you do this, you scrape off the enamel, because enameled wire, you won't be able to solder it. But just, I usually take a knife blade, but scrape off the enamel and make that happen. And then you'll be able to tune the coil. This is going to be better for VHF and up in the frequency. What this is going to be good for very, very low frequency stuff. But if you're out there trying to make things happen for the VHF, then you can use your little rubber duck, and that'll work really good. Really, really good. But that's what we want to do. As we get through all of this, we want to make things happen. We want to make sure you understand all of the pictorials, the schematics, and so on. And you're going to be having more fun building. That's what it's all about. Here is a list of some of the companies that you should go spend some time looking at their sites and get their catalogs. A couple of them are really, really good. The Antique Radio is just marvelous. I really like this. Antique Electronic Supply. It's tubesandmore.com. And Gateway Electronics is also wonderful. Gateway-Electronics. But if you need any tubes at all, the best place I find them is a thing called a site called vacuumtubes.com. That's WB0SND. And he's really a good guy, and he can help you. AM Phone Net, check it out. That'll give you a lot of information about AM and some of the operations and fun things that we do. So that's where we are now. And I'm going to go put a different antenna on this. Maybe we'll come back in Amanda's part. I'll have that fired up because I need another antenna than that little lead. I'll get that going for you. But there we have it. And it's a good start to what's going to happen. And here I show you, this is what the next process is going to be. Here's a start of the power supply. I put this together this afternoon, and here's the power supply using a 6X5 and a regulator or a rectifier, and the transformer is a Hammond transformer. See, it's pretty simple. Power supply is very simple, but that little booger will have about 300 watts, and then we're going to have some dropping resistors on it because we won't need that much to drive just the one little 12AU7. But that's the power supply part of it, and complete with a jeweled light and a switch. And the transmitter, here's what the transmitter looks like right here. This is a single tube. It's a 12AU7. And I've talked to Dick several times on this thing recently. He's about, oh gosh, he's about 200 miles from me, and we work him in the mornings, and that's it. That's a transmitter to modulator, the whole bit. And it's just very exciting, and the main thing is it's all about building. So that's where we are from here. I hope that you get to learn something through the project, even if you don't build it, that you can learn what's going on and join us with all the fun that we have on AM or wherever. You can use this on CW also. So there you have it. And I'm really, really excited to get things started. But I want you to join us and have a little bit of fun. Don, you have your soldering iron and all that. You got that ready, Don?
Spring is approaching. That means we're turning our attention to antennas, a lot of us are, and whether you're looking to repair your existing antenna or upgrade to a completely new one, DX Engineering has a wide range of options that will completely suit whatever your operating style or environment, like the DX Engineering Skyhawk antenna. It's a great choice for making long-distance contacts. In fact, really, seriously, there may not be a better 2015 and 10-meter tri-bander on the market than the DX Engineering Skyhawk. No traps. Gives you the best bandwidth and the lowest possible loss. The antenna's aluminum and stainless steel components contribute to reduced weight and excellent corrosion resistance. It will give you years of trouble-free service. You can turn your little pop gun into a big gun with this pile-up busting Yagi. Skyhawk manufactured and sold exclusively by DX Engineering. And if you want to get on the work bands, check out the DX Engineering Skylark. It covers 17 and 12 with instant band changes. and you'll enjoy close to 8 dB gain on either band, all at an SWR under 1.3:1 across each band, plus a front-to-back ratio above 20 dB. Relatively short 16-foot boom, very few moving parts, allows it to handle winds up to 90 miles an hour, and the DX Engineering Skylark will easily handle full limit power for you fellas who like to throw that full gallon around. DX Engineering is also an authorized E-Antenna North American distributor. That means you can now get world-class E-Antenna antennas without the hassle of international shipping and the cost and the time involved and everything else. DX Engineering has many antennas in stock. They're ready to ship today. They're rugged, they're high performance, and they will not break the bank. EA Antennas antenna line has a huge range of designs covering HF, VHF, and UHF. Yagi's, wire dipoles, quads, and loops are all in there. HF and VHF antennas can be found in some of Europe's most competitive DX stations, and now you can get them for your installation from DX Engineering. You can see them all by using keyword eAntenna at dxengineering.com. I want you to check out DX Engineering, because if you haven't ordered from them, you're missing out, because DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a trek headed your way tonight with proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. You need to go online, request your catalog, or just shop online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Stay up for a week and do it nonstop for a week. I guarantee you won't be able to see everything that DX Engineering has. Seriously. 7 days a week, dxengineering.com/hamnation. I'm so excited I'm getting tongue-tied. DX Engineering, thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. You know, something else DX Engineering carries is a bunch of MFJ stuff. And today is K5FLU Martin Jew's birthday. And it's his ham radio birthday because he's 73 today. So Martin Jew, MFJ. The MFNJ, Martin F. Jew of MFJ. Happy 73rd, sir. You're a credit to the hobby. That is for sure. Nice to have Martin with us still. What a great guy. Let's go ahead and check out the news of the week, shall we, from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2052, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. Good news for the International Space Station. They're expecting a special delivery.
The newest amateur radio aboard the International Space Station is on its way. It's an Ericsson 2-meter VHF radio, and it took off from Launch Pad 39A at the Kennedy Space Center with the launch of a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket on Sunday, February 19th. Its mission? To replace the Ericsson radio that failed aboard the space station several months ago. The Ericsson will be used for contact with educational groups and schools and for amateur packet radio in the Columbus module. Frank Bauer, KA3HDO, Eris's international chairman, reported that the Ericsson will be installed in the Columbus module and will take the place of the UHF radio that has been used in the meantime for some school contacts and APRS packet. Frank announced in a statement that he believed Eris was making, quote, great progress on the development of the new interoperable radio system that we hope to use to replace our aging radio infrastructure in the Columbus module and the service module, end quote. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
If you're part of a school or other educational institution that's hoping for a student radio contact with the crew aboard the ISS, you're going to want to plan ahead.
Educators and school officials have only until April 15th to apply for a chance to make radio contact with the International Space Station in 2018. Eris is already looking to book its crew schedule between January 1st and June 30th of next year. Applicant schools should be able to engage large numbers of participants and show how the radio contact will be used as a part of an overall education plan. As the astronauts and cosmonauts answer questions about living and working in space, students will also get to learn about space research, radio science, satellite communication, and wireless technology. The contacts over FM are expected to last about 10 minutes. If you need guidance putting your application together, Eris has information sessions online, which last about an hour. The next sessions will be on Monday, March 6th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and Tuesday, March 16th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. For further details, contact Eris directly by emailing Eris, that's A-R-I-S-S, at ARISS.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9 VPG.
Finally this week, an announcement that has long since become a treasured annual tradition at Amateur Radio Newsline. The Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF Memorial Young Ham of the Year Award.
Justice Bill helped create Newsline for hams of the present. He believed in nurturing hams of the future. We carry on that mission this year by inviting listeners to look around them at the promising young operators they know who are making a difference in their communities and making contributions to advanced radio science. Nominees must be 18 or younger and be a resident of the United States, its possessions, or any Canadian province. Application forms are available on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. Please read the rules carefully. Applications are being accepted between Wednesday, March 1st and May 31st. The award will be presented on August 19th at the Huntsville Hamfest in Huntsville, Alabama. In the weeks ahead, you'll hear some of our past winners speaking on Newsline, explaining the award's impact on their life. For now, look around you, find that deserving young ham, and make that nomination.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And speaking of WTWW, we're on 5085 right now with the audio from Ham Nation, also on 12.105 with a giant signal into Africa. And Ted Randall and the QSO show and the folks over at WTWW, huge supporters of Amateur Radio Newsline and the great friends of Bill Pasternak and the Young Ham of the Year Award. And we're happy to have them on our team. All right, let's go ahead and get with someone else who we're happy to have on our team, and that is Dr. Tamitha Scove. She's not with us tonight, but we do have a solar update. And she tells me that we're in the middle of a solar storm right now. It's due to a small solar eruption compounded by some fast solar wind. The fast wind should last another day at least, so ham radio will be affected easily for another day or two. And the solar flare and radiation storm outlook, next slide, shows us enough solar flux to keep amateur radio propagation at marginal levels. That should last all week. No chance of M flares, so at least there won't be much noise on the bands this week except for the noise that's due to the current solar storm. And, of course, for up to the second updates, you can always check her out on Twitter. There's her Twitter page. That is at Tamitha Scove. So hopefully we'll have her back next week. And she will be at Dayton, as a matter of fact, with Contest University, with Tim Duffy and the fine folks over at DX Engineering. So looking forward to seeing her again at Dayton. Yep, we're going to go to Dayton this year. I'm excited, very excited about going to Dayton. I'm also excited about ICOM. Let's get a word from them, shall we?
It's time to put away those winter boots and spring forward with ICOM. Base stations, mobile transceivers, handhelds, and more, ICOM has all the equipment to help make your spring full of adventure. Get out and get mobile with ICOM. Communicate with the touch of your fingertips. Perfect for small spaces, the IC7100 is the ideal D-Star option to help communicate anywhere. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. Do you have spring travel plans this year? Back for a limited time, the IC7200 is a great option for hams wanting a device to carry out into the field. Simple and tough with IFDSP, digital noise reduction, and USB port for PC control. Ideal for the ham on the go, try the IC7300. It's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design, RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, SD memory card slot, and more. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all ICOM radios.
You know, you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio and for February and They're also going to give away another one next month. It's the ID51A Plus dual band, dual watch, handy talkie with dual band, VHF, UHF, analog and D-Star, built-in GPS receiver, DV and FM repeater list function, independent AM FM receiver, free Android app, and a lot more. The winner for February was Joshua KG4UFV. Congratulations, Joshua. ICOM will be getting that right out to you. And the rest of you, hey, go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register. It's a pretty simple process there, and you can give them some feedback about Ham Nation while you're there as well. So check that out. And if you remember, last week I asked a question straight from the Book of Gordo. That's right, Gordon's Technician Study Guide. And the question was, when using a directional antenna, how might your station be able to access a distant repeater if buildings and obstructions are blocking the direct line of sight? Well, we had a winner, and that's Richard Mask, K8RMM. He said the answer is B. Try to find a path that reflects the signal to the repeater. And that's a good idea, and oftentimes that will work. Well, Richard, we're going to send you a DX Engineering, and I know Don will be excited about this. It's a canvas tote bag. Great for, well, I use it to carry my coax to field day, also extension cables. It's a good heavy-duty bag. Same quality of canvas that you'll see a tower rigger using with his bag. For next week, I got another prize here. This one, well, we'll do this to celebrate Martin Jew's 73rd birthday. We're going to give away an MFJ 148RC dual 12 24-hour clock, radio control so it sets itself, and it's got a 10-minute ID timer in it as well. If you'd like to win that, well, we're going to ask one out of Gordo's new 2016 through 2020 Extra Class Amateur Radio Guide. This question, and it's one hand-chosen by Gordo just for us to use here. What is the maximum output permitted on the 60-meter band? Is it 50 watts PEP ERP into an isotropic radiator, 50 watts PEP ERP relative to a dipole, 100 watts PEP effective radiated into the gain of a half-wave dipole, or 100 watt PEP effective radiated power relative to an isotropic radiator? Well, send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you can win this MFJ 148RC. And now, Bob, I think you've got something else you want to bring to our attention.
Well, yeah, you're going to be part of this. You know, you and I talk about building things all the time and checking right. your work. Remember, I checked on my work. This would be a good question for everybody. I didn't check two of the contacts. What was it? The meter. You know, I had done this before. And I'd put the wires on the meter. Well, one of them, I had it tightened down, but for some unknown reason, it wasn't tight. So I tightened it back down. Now I hit the foot. Hello.
Oh, and all right.
Well, it's because I would. Well, I'll be honest with you, everybody. There's my problem. I was watching the clock. And I did that before. You can't do that, right, George? You have to check everything twice, right?
Yeah, and it's very hard to build stuff and podcast at the same time, but looks like you pulled it off there. It looks like you might even be running a little bit of power.
Yeah.
Well, I also put a longer length on my wire because I thought, well, maybe it's the antenna. That wasn't it either, so what can I tell you? So anyway, it's working, and thanks for letting me come back. I just wanted to let everybody know and learn something. I remember I didn't check that meter. I assumed it was okay. That's wrong, isn't it, George?
That is wrong. You always need to go back and check your connections. Sometimes it's not just that they're loose. It might be that you connected it to the wrong thing. Of course, you didn't there. But, yeah, things get loose. And, you know, that's probably at least 50% of my job is fixing loose connections.
Well, sometimes Sarah has to fix a loose screw for me, but whatever. Okay. Thanks for letting me jump back. I wanted to let everybody learn about what I didn't do. Don't let that happen to you.
All right, Bob. And that was a great project. We really enjoyed that and looking forward to seeing it in the future as it progresses along there. Well, we've got Dale standing in the wings here with some viewer videos for us tonight. Hi, Dale.
Okay, George, good evening to you. Hi, Bob. Glad to have you back. And by golly, we're going to jump right into the video segment. We've got a two-part video series tonight that dispels the myth that an antenna tuner eliminates the SWR. In the videos, James, he's W9JUG, sets up an experiment to show what is really happening. We'll jump right into part one now. It's sort of a mini Show Me Your Shack as modified for Jim's demonstration. Let's watch.
Hello, this is Jim W9JUG with a little video on antenna tuner. Here we have the ICOM 745 HF transceiver. You can see right here. And here's the LDG automatic tuner, which is connected directly to the transmitter. And over here, we have a external SWR bridge connected to the output of the tuner. And here we have a manual tuner that is not in the circuit. This particular radio does not have an internal antenna tuner, so we have the LDG to function with that. The term antenna tuner, in my opinion, is a misnomer because the actual tuning of the antenna is a function of the feed point impedance and the length of the transmission line, etc. These parameters do not change when the tuner is in use. What the antenna tuner actually does is to provide a 50 ohm load to the transmitter. Therefore, use of an antenna tuner allows the transmitter to produce maximum output. The following will be a demonstration of the tuner operation and prove that the SWR will not change on the antenna when a tuner is utilized. This is the end of part one. Thank you.
You've just seen a quick tour of the equipment Jim used. Now we're going to take time and watch as he demonstrates and runs a test which will dispel the myth once and for all that antenna tuners fix standing wave ratio problems once and for all.
Welcome to part two, tuner operation. Using an antenna analyzer, I have previously tuned the antenna to a frequency of 29.600 megahertz. In looking at the LDG tuner, notice that there are two LED bar graphs. One measures power and the other measures SWR. When I key the transmitter, as I will do now, you see the bar graph, top bar graph reads 20 watts, but the SWR bar graph is not lit because it is a 1-to-1 standing wave ratio. The tuner is in the bypass mode, which connects the antenna directly to the transmitter and not through the tuner. When I change the frequency to 28.014, the SWR reads about 3-to-1. Okay, on this frequency. I have connected an external SWR meter between the antenna and the tuner. Notice that the SWR on the external meter reads approximately 3-to-1. Okay. We will now place the tuner in the tuner function and key the transmitter and see what the SWR is. Okay, The SWR now is 1-to-1. Okay? That's what the transmitter is seeing. But let's look at the external SWR meter. And we see that it is approximately 3-to-1. It did not change. So this proves that using the tuner does not change the SWR at the antenna, but does change the SWR as seen by the transmitter. This allows the transmitter to produce maximum power. Thank you for viewing W9JUG.
Well, that's Jim. As he said, W9JUG. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate you showing our Ham Nation audience that an antenna tuner does not fix a bad SWR condition in the antenna and feed lines. Rather, it just masks the condition for the transceiver so that it thinks it's looking at a normal non-reactive 50-ohm load. And the moral of the story, then, is that the place to fix the SWR issue is at the antenna itself. Well, that's it for tonight's video segment. Remember, we're here to show your videos and your shack photos. If you'd like to dispel another ham radio myth, possibly, or simply tell us about an event sponsored by your local ham club, just submit a link to your video to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv. And don't forget to send your shack photos to the address shown on the bottom third of the screen. Amanda's standing by to report the latest news from the chat room. And I believe she's ready there in the Canyon City studio. Amanda, good evening. Welcome aboard.
Well, good evening, Dale. Yeah. Hello, everybody. I don't think you guys can see it, so I'm going to lift my shirt up here a little bit. Look at what I'm wearing. Ham Nation.
All right.
Woo.
Hey. Guys, be sure to go check that out on Teespring. Brian, I'm sure you know the... I know you know the address.
I think if you go to twit.tv/store, it should come up.
There you go. Follow that. All right. Let's get to it, you guys. I have a couple of announcements first. I'd like to... This is so cute. Crystal sent us a message on Facebook, and I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew this. She is the sweetest gal in the world, the sweetest wife ever. KC8AQW. She wanted us to say happy anniversary to her and Rick, W8AT, celebrating their 37th anniversary. So, and that's tonight. Happy anniversary, you guys.
All right.
Thank you for watching Ham Nation and letting us share in that as well. All right, one more announcement. Paul McCorder, he's a teacher in El Dorado, Texas. They're going to be launching a high-altitude balloon, hopefully coming this Tuesday morning, and it's going to be live on 40 meters. They were also featured on the cover of the February QST magazine, if you caught that. So they're going to be providing live video streaming coverage on their YouTube channel. Be sure to search for that. All right, let's get to the questions, shall we? Bob, the first one is for you, KB6LCW. He'd like to say, Bob, can you maybe post a parts list for the project that you're building?
Very good question, because that's what I'm working on, the parts list. And I gave you some of the suppliers where I bought them, but that'll be coming up next week. That's part of the first we'll have the plans of what's going to happen and the parts list for each one as we go along. And hopefully it'll be easy for you to do that, because I want you to have the parts before we start building it. So that'll start that. So thanks for asking.
Okay, so we'll see the parts list. Not to mention, we're going to see more of this great project. I'm so excited. And the next question for you, Bob, same kit. What is the output power that you plan on having on your project?
Oh, the single tube, the little 12 AU7, is going to be about 2 watts. And we're doing that just because I want to keep it down. And we might continue on. I showed you a picture of my great mentor that's gave me the inspiration for this. Richard, he's got a pair of eight. I think they're a pair of 813s running about 300 watts on pine board.
Oh.
So But you got to be a little careful there because I think he's got 2,000 volts on the plates of those puppies. But we're not going to get into that series. But I'm going to keep it down to a couple of watts. But I work him 200 miles away on that very transmitter you saw running about 2 watts. So it's amazing what you can do for a little bit of power.
Absolutely. And a related question is someone in the chat room, and I'm sorry, I can't remember your call sign at this moment. They said, is it possible to use the 12AX7 instead of the 12AU7?
No, it'll work, but the 12AU7 lends itself better for the RF. Now, we are going to use a 12AX7 for a microphone preamplifier, and we're going to have all kinds of things. Once we build that preamplifier, we're going to build an audio amp. I got all kinds of plans. We could take this thing as far as you want to go. That it just depends on time. It's really tough because we got to keep it down to about 10 minutes, 12 minutes, and it's tough to do that, as George and I talked about a while ago. But at least we'll get involved that you can understand what's happening from what we're doing with the video.
Okay, well, good enough. And I'm excited to see more of that same stuff. I know, looking at the chat room, a huge amount of applause and saying thank you, Bob, for showing us this so far. So my next question, Gordo, you're still here with us, right?
I am here.
Okay, that's awesome. Now, this is kind of an incomplete question, but I think you're going to pick up on it. So W4AAX, Spike wants to know, he says, some of the people he's been talking to say not to tune a multiband wire antenna. And he says, I usually believe those guys, but what does everyone else think? He's using a Wyndham off-center fed cut for 80 meters.
If they choose the Wyndham for 80 meters, it's pretty darn long. It's about 100 and some feet long, but it works great. And the key for 75, 80 meter operation is once it's up, just as you saw with Dale's video, one needs to make sure that you've got an antenna analyzer, and on the end, each end of the 1/3 and 2/3 sides of the 80-meter Wyndham that also works on 40, 20, sort of on 15 and 10 meters and 6, make sure that you prune it by just doubling the wire back on itself to raise the resonant frequency, or to make it longer, you may need to just stretch it all the way out. Usually they build them so they're a little on the long side. Remember, lower, longer, Amanda, for resonance on any type of dipole antenna. So I love the off-center fed Wyndham. It's a real kicker.
And I have a follow-up question on that. I have a friend here locally who just bought an amplifier, and his amplifier with his off-center fed was showing a lot of SWR. So he decided that he was going to cut the antenna to the lower portions of the bands, in the CW portions, whereas a lot of people have suggested to him to cut it and tune it to where he will actually be using, which would be in the voice portions of the band. So on 40 meters, let's pick 7,200. That's where he would be talking. What is your advice? What do you recommend?
Well, on the off-center fed Wyndham, because it is harmonically related to each of the different bands, he may want to bring it up a little bit higher, as you say, so that way he's got 50 kilohertz down and 50 kilohertz above on the Wyndham, maybe even as much as 75 kilohertz for a 2-to-1 SWR, then he'll be set. But instead of cutting, he needs to double back the ends of the antenna to raise 40 meters, or extend them all the way out, maybe droop it slightly to bring the resonance down, lower, longer.
Very good. And the ultimate goal, obviously, is resonance, right, Bob?
There is nothing like a resonant antenna. Nothing. Just resonant. Forget all this other nonsense. Resonant antennas. Yes.
That's why we love you. All right, let me go over some net announcements tonight. We have the D-Star net on 14 Charlie, and we have the Echo Link net on the Dew Drop In. And on HF, we have the net going on 7192. Thank you, Kevin, for running that tonight. No 20-meter net as of yet. Let's wait until springtime gets here, and we'll start up the 20-meter net again. And don't forget, we have the new DMR net on TAC 311. So that's all I've got for announcements tonight. I'll send it back to you, Bob. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Great job, everybody. And I hope that that you enjoy this thing as much as I do. And there are several questions about we have several plans for perhaps videos. We're also looking at publishing all of this. So, you'll, as we get along, we'll get some ideas and we'll get ideas from you, too. So let us know what happens. And yes, this is our new PR-77. That's why you haven't seen me for a while. We've been getting this all together, but it's now shipping and I'm thrilled to death with it. Our copy of the RCA 1938 77D. And it's a wonderful broadcast microphone, but it works great here. It's going to be, I think it's going to take over the podcast world. They all want to look like Larry King. Not look like him, but his, the microphone will look like. Well, we've had great fun tonight. So we'll be back here next week, and who knows what's going to happen, but we'll be here and we'll be having fun. Be sure and tell everybody, get your club involved. Let them know what's going on here, because you'll learn so much about things here on Ham Nation from a great cast of people. And Valerie will be here next week, and who knows who else. So come back and join us. Thanks, Brian, for taking care of all of us, and Leo and the whole Twit family. So until next week, we're going to say 7-3, not threes, 7-3 from the Ozark. This is Bob Heil, K9EID, and the entire cast of Ham Nation. Bye-bye for now.
Bye, guys. Jeff wanted to come in and say hi. Say hi.
Hello.
Yay.